argument over states' rights versus federal laws is a polarizing topic, with people holding strong opinions on both sides.
And a new legal group in Wisconsin called the Center for Competitive Federalism is taking up the challenge of states' rights nationwide. The group launched last night with political leaders like Wisconsin Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish and Wisconsin Representative Dale Coinga in attendance. The group's first report is called Wisconsin, Not Washington.
Joining us now is Rick Essenberg. He's the founder, president, and general counsel for the Wisconsin Institute of Law and Liberty, which initiated the new group. Rick, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
So, Rick, why do you think Wisconsin needs an initiative like this?
Well, the problem is this. Back in when our Constitution was adopted in 1787, our founders adopted what James Madison called sort of a dual sovereignty. That is, the federal government was a sovereign. It was given certain enumerated but limited powers, and in those areas, but in only those areas, it was supreme. Other governmental powers were to be within the states. And we've moved away from this, what I call competitive federalism, into something that's called cooperative federalism, where the states have become sort of junior partners or administrative subunits of the federal government, who are increasingly dictated to by Washington and whose policy options are constrained by Washington. And particularly in the country that we live in today, which is characterized by, you know, for better or worse, a lot of individual freedom. I mean, we've had a great deal of movement towards individual freedom over the last 50 years. We have become a much more diverse country. The notion that proper policy can be determined and dictated in one place, that is Washington, D.C., for the rest of the country, and increasingly dictated by one person, as, you know, power has over the years been increasingly consolidated in the presidency of the United States. Certainly that was the process that, you know, was ongoing during the Bush 43 years, certainly has accelerated during the Obama years. That idea is implausible, and that what we need to do is return to the more diverse system which our founders contemplated, you know, one in which the states would function as laboratories of democracy, that they would be able to engage in trial and error with respect to policy, that they would, certainly the federal government would have its role, there would be certain things that the states could not do, and that the states themselves would be disciplined not only by their own constitutions, but by the ability of the persons who live within them to vote with their feet and go someplace else if they didn't like the policy that their particular state was adopting.
What evidence would you point to make the case that what you say is a scale tilted toward the federal government is harming states and harming people?
Well, you know, the problem is this. We increasingly have the people that we elect and we send to Madison are increasingly constrained by what happens in Washington. You know, we had a debate during the last, you know, budget biennium about the reduction in state funding for the University of Wisconsin system. And you know, we could argue about how to look at that. I mean, University of Wisconsin's revenue per pupil has gone up 20% in real terms over the last 10 years. But it is absolutely true that state support for the University of Wisconsin system has gone down. And not just in Wisconsin, but across the country. And it's not because we spend less money in the state of Wisconsin. The government doesn't spend less money. It spends more. It's not because cut taxes or anything like that. It's because increasingly our budget and our policy decisions are made in Washington. And if you were to look at our budget over the last 60 years, you'd see that what we're now spending money on are not Wisconsin priorities, but Washington priorities. And sometimes Washington gets it right, but it's implausible to think that Washington will always get it right. And so I think that this having additional flexibility, having additional choice and diversity with respect to the making of policy is probably a good idea. We see that sort of everywhere in our society, where we've sort of moved away from large centralized institution and one-size-fits-all answers to, you know, increasingly, in particular in the digital age, you know, a greater number of possibilities and choices.
We're talking with Rick Essenberg right now. He's the founder, president, and general counsel for the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. And we're talking about his organization's new initiative to support states' rights. It's called Center for Competitive Federalism. We talked a little bit about that just a bit ago. And Rick, you've described what you see as a more flexibility on the state's part, what you're hoping to see. And I wonder if you could explain a little bit more about how that would work on the ground, how you think we could emerge into a spot that you think would be more like the dual sovereign sovereignty model that you talked about earlier.
And I want to differ with you a little bit. I don't think that this project is simply about states' rights. And in fact, when we introduced it, I said that because there are ways and there are areas in which the federal government does need to be supreme. There are areas like military spending, foreign policy, immigration, in which, you know, we need the national government to make policy for us. It's also very important that in each of these states that the privileges and immunities and rights of citizens of the United States be respected. So it's very important that states not be able to exclude people, that, you know, goods and services and people can flow across state lines. It's very important that the constitutional rights, guarantees of free speech, free association, equal protection of the laws, that these are extended to citizens of the individual states. But
I want to jump in and ask you about one of those points you just brought up, because some people could argue that allowing states to dictate some laws about social issues, maybe like gay rights and marriage, mean that states would have the power to codify discrimination. How would you challenge that?
Well, I would say that I think that's wrong, or at least it's not a project that we're contemplating. That is, the kind of competitive federalism that we're envisioning doesn't work unless you protect the civil rights of United States citizens, because it's not simply a question of empowering state government. As I said before, you know, things like interstate commerce, movement across state lines, that has to be respected. And so do the civil rights of American citizens, because it's not that the state governments are sort of inherently virtuous and we can always expect the state governments to do the right thing. The point is that we are likely to arrive at the best policy if the states serve as laboratories of democracy. But they can't serve as laboratories of democracy if they wall themselves off or they deny the individual rights of the citizens who live within them. So we can argue about, you know, what the civil rights of United States citizens should be, right? We can argue about, you know, marriage and sexual orientation and things like that. But whatever those core individual rights of a United States citizen are, they've got to be respected by the states. But what we don't need is we don't need the federal government dictating our policy with respect to entitlements, with respect to how we use, you know, transportation funding. You know, we're going to have a big controversy in the state of Wisconsin in the next biennial budget over transportation funding.
We're talking with Rick Essenberg right now, founder, president, and general counsel for the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. And he's joining us to talk about his organization's new initiative, part of which he says is states' rights, talking about some other things as well. The new initiative called Center for Competitive Federalism.
I want to hear from you. Should Wisconsin and other states be able to institute their own laws and policies with less federal oversight, maybe, than they're currently getting? How much say should the federal government have in a state like Wisconsin in setting things like transportation policy, as our guest was just mentioning? How much independence should states have? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800 800- 602-622-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. You can also email us, by the way, at talk@WPR.org.
We're continuing our conversation about the recently announced initiative from the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. It's called, the new report from them is called Wisconsin, Not Washington. And the initiative is advocating for less federal oversight in states' laws nationwide.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Where do you think the balance should be on how far states can go their own way, set their own agenda, try their own policies versus federal oversight reining them in? Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. And, of course, you can always email talk@WPR.org.
And we're continuing our conversation about states' rights and more with Rick Essenberg. He's the founder, president, and general counsel for the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. And Rick, you've said there is a direct causal relationship between the growth of federal spending and the growth in state spending. Briefly, because we have a lot of people waiting to talk to you, can you explain the relationship that you see?
Well, because oftentimes what the federal government does is it doesn't spend the money itself. It tells the states that, look, you've got to spend the money, either because we're imposing a mandate on you or we've adopted a program of conditional grants and aid, and you have to keep up maintenance of effort is what they call it. And eventually the federal support dwindles relative to the need. And so you wind up with a state budget which looks very different than anything that the people of the state would have chosen. That's one of the reasons, I think, why, you know, things like support for the University of Wisconsin have dwindled, because, you know, we're chasing federal priorities now instead of priorities that are made by the people we elect in Wisconsin and send to Madison.
Now, there are some people at your launch, some legislators pointing at recent federal actions that they say made it difficult to innovate or to do what they thought was best here in Wisconsin. I want to look at an example here. Let's take carbon emissions, which is something the White House is looking for, reduce carbon emissions. How would this apply to the model you're talking about here that you're looking for?
Well, you know, the problem that there's sort of one solution to that question, it seems to me to be implausible. That is that, states, you know, there's this sort of idea that if you leave states to their own devices, that, you know, they're going to make all the wrong decisions and they're going to allow their states to be sort of turned into hellholes, and we really can't trust them to do that. I don't think there's a lot of evidence for that. I think that, you know, with respect to levels of regulation, levels of taxation, ways to address, you know, pollution problems, there's a lot more room than we acknowledge to allow, you know, states to experiment and to do different things. And, you know, it was Justice Brandeis, hardly a conservative, you know, who called states the laboratories of democracy, that you know, it's very unlikely that one institution, one authority will ever be able to figure everything out. The world is just too complicated for that. And so one of the reasons that we see so much innovation in the private marketplace is because there are a lot of people that try different things. They don't always succeed. States won't always succeed. But over time, I think we can get to a better place if we allow a multiplicity of diverse approaches to a greater extent than we do now. Again, there are things where the federal government needs to have plenary authority and be supreme. So it's not simply a question of states' rights, and which is why that's a term that I will never use in describing this project.
All right, I'm going to take a caller now. We've got Mike on the line with us in Sun Prairie. Hi, Mike.
Hi. On one hand, I get what he's saying, but I challenge the idea that a few people around the different states are going to come up with a better idea than 220 years of iterative legislation and the various democratic processes on where we got to our various laws and amendments to the Bill of Rights and so forth. And remember, we also fought a civil war over this. We got to this over 220 years of iteration. And I think that, you know, we always should be talking about these things. But I think his cases that he brought up, especially around transport, transportation funding and so forth. You know, if we're going to have the federal government say we are going to fund some road projects and we're going to take money from Wisconsin and give it to Mississippi or from Mississippi and give it to Wisconsin, there are going to have to be standards that are met and dealt with, because otherwise...
Mike, I'm just going to jump in here, make sure we're very short on time. I want to make sure our guest gets to respond to you. And Rick, briefly, what do you say to Mike's concern that there's a reason we have a track record of legislative history because we're that idea has been refined?
Well, I mean, first of all, the caller mentions the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights is very important. We're not challenging the Bill of Rights. Second, when you talk about iteration of policy, what the caller is recognizing is that it takes a lot of different approaches sometimes to result in the right policy, and there's not a one-size-fits-all solution, and so letting states try things, I think, is important. I would challenge the assumption that what we need to do is send all our money for transportation, for example, to Washington, let them have a cut, and then send it back to the state of Wisconsin. You know, Bill Buckley said that what we've done is we've made the sky black with dollars crisscrossing across the country, and all we're really doing is sending it to Washington, allowing Washington to take a cut, and then allowing Washington to send it back with strings attached. I don't think we need to do that to the extent that we are now.
And, Rick, we leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Rick Essenberg, founder, president, and general counsel for the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. And he joined us to talk about his group's new initiative. It's called the Center for Competitive Federalism.